Chapter 13. "That is all," said the voice of the alien, and Biff stared in utter astonishment at the speaker in the wall panel. The alien had spoken in heavily accented Ruhar, but instead of appreciating the endless hours of effort she had devoted to mastering a completely foreign language, Biff was insulted by how her primitive tongue butchered the words.
"An alien? In command of our ship?"
Biff raged, spitting in his fury. Perkins was not only an alien. She was from a backward species that barely had spaceflight when the Ruhar arrived at their disgusting planet, a species that had come to Gitanu as an enemy occupation force and only recently had renounced their allegiance to the Kristang Coalition. As natural-born cowards, the humans would switch sides again as soon as it was convenient, Biff declared. This Perkins woman had only been aboard the Rue Tastella for a month. How could she possibly be so insufferably arrogant to think she was qualified to command a Ruhar cruiser, a ship where every piece of technology was far beyond her understanding? Biff raged and railed against the injustice to the point of battering an innocent wall panel with a wrench. The action only caused a scratch on the panel and sent Biff spinning off across the compartment out of control in the zero gravity, injuring his dignity. His companions did their best to quell their leader's spiteful temper. They assured him that Urmat Datha must not have known Biff was alive when command was transferred to the alien, or the alien had somehow coerced Datha. It was well known the humans were desperate for recognition, desperate for any opportunity to show they could be equal to the clearly superior Ruhar. Biff should be in command. Only he could save them. Was that not why Biff already commanded the cadet corps aboard the ship? After soaking up enough praise to soothe his outraged ego, Biff made an angry cutting motion with one hand to end the babbling of his underlings.
"Datha was injured and not competent to transfer command. He was a good man, a good officer, but he had no authority to give this warship," he emphasized that word, "to an alien. A first-year cadet," he thought of the traitorous nerd, "knows more about this ship than the human Perkins does. Do you know she was a staff assistant, not a line officer?"
His friends nodded vigorous agreement, pleased that Biff was back to his old self.
"This ship is disabled in deep space, on our own. Life support is failing. The reactors are offline. Backup power will be strained by providing life support to the aliens," he fairly spat in disgust. "In desperate times, hard decisions must be made. That is the nature of leadership."
His followers gazed at him with rapt attention, knowing Biff was the person they needed to make the tough decisions, the unpleasant decisions, the necessary decisions. The decisions that had to be made soon, or they would all die.
"Datha was not competent when he acted, and he was never authorized to appoint Perkins to command, so his action is invalid,"
Biff declared, and his followers looked at each other and nodded with grim expressions.
"We need to act, or the ship is doomed. We need to act now. It is our duty."
Biff picked up the wrench again, tapping the head forcefully into a palm.
"Who is with me?"
With the help of cadets who knew the ship much better than he did, Dave found a way to the engineering compartment using passageways inside the ship. Where the way was not clear, the cadets sliced away obstructions with plasma torches, cut power to relays that were sparking, and restored emergency power to stuck bulkhead doors. Shortly after testing that the way was indeed as safe as it could be made, Dave led a group of engineering cadets back to speak with Jin Garner, and most of them went back up the passageway with Dave to begin making repairs as directed by Jin, with a few cadets remaining to work on the puzzling task of determining if it was safe to restart a reactor. Perkins visibly relaxed, or at least visibly was no longer feeling the weight of an entire planet on her shoulders. Another group of cadets came to get instructions, accompanied by the other Verdkris aboard, a male with the rank of Sergeant named Krokastal Jates. He was older than Dave, and naturally assumed authority, although he deferred to Perkins without apparent resentment. The Mavericks had trained with Jates only 3 times, as he was already fully qualified for spaceborne duty, and his role aboard the ship was to train Ruhar cadets in real-life space infantry tactics, whether they liked it or not. When the cadets were leaving to go perform whatever critical tasks were needed elsewhere in the ship, Jaetz lingered behind. Perkins was huddled with Jin Garner, providing moral support and encouragement, since she had no idea how most systems aboard the ship worked, when with the corner of her eye she saw more cadets come floating in through the open hatch. She ignored them, until she could not.
"Nobody move!"
The shout rang out in the compartment. Perkins spun to see who had spoken, her mind flashing to scenarios of someone warning of a dangerous condition with a power relay or some other technical problem. She was astonished to see a group of three Ruhar cadets pointing weapons at her. Biff held a rifle, and his two friends had sidearms. The ranking cadet made a show of holding the rifle in dramatic fashion at his hip, keeping the muzzle trained on Perkins.
"I said nobody move! That means all of you!"
He glared angrily around the compartment, sounding like a bank robber in an old movie. "Everyone stay where you are," Perkins ordered. "Cadet Kulsoon, what do you think you are doing?"
"I don't have to think anything. I am taking control of this ship back from you. I am assuming command, effective immediately. No alien should be in command of our warships."
He shot a look of hatred at Jaetz, who had made a fool of Bift during several training exercises.
"No alien should be aboard one of our ships unless they are in the brig."
Perkins took a breath to keep the fear from her voice. It didn't work. "Where did you get those weapons? The armory is locked down." It was locked down, she knew that for certain, because her initial tour of the ship had included the armory, or technically the heavy door of the armory. Even the executive officer giving her the tour did not have authorization to open the armory door. Perkins had been surprised by that bit of information. She was even more surprised to learn the toaster had an armory. "Why did a training ship need live weapons?" she had asked. The XO had explained the armory was left over from when the cruiser was a frontline warship, and it had been kept in case the Rue Tostella needed to quickly be returned to fleet service.
"It was locked," Biff replied with a smirk. "You are as ignorant as you are stupid and primitive. This is our ship. We know how to bypass security measures."
He winked at his friends, who grinned back, pleased at his cleverness. "That would take an impressive level of skill," Jaetz said in an admiring tone, while with his eyes he gave Perkins a look she could not interpret. Was the Kristang going to join the mutiny, to save himself and Tutula? Or was something else going on? "Let me guess. You cut through the power circuits behind the bulkhead to the armory?"
"Good guess, Sergeant Jaetz,"
Biff replied with a frown, unhappy about a member of an enemy species knowing such dangerous secrets about a Ruhar warship, even a ship as obsolete as the Rue Tostella.
"I suggest you forget such knowledge."
"What next?" Perkins had used the time to regain her courage. She was determined to defy the little shit cadet and not let him see her sweat. "You kill us? Throw us out an airlock?"
"No. Although, as you are an enemy species, and you unlawfully took control of a warship, I would be within my rights under combat conditions to kill all of you,"
Biff bluffed, knowing that was a lie.
"We're not in combat now."
Dave pushed himself forward, and Perkins restrained him with one hand.
"Do not be afraid, little fool. I don't plan to kill you. Not directly. We will put your kind and the two Kristang into a dropship with its flight controls disabled. You will float away."
The cadet leader made a mocking gesture, miming an object spinning slowly through space.
"Once you are beyond communications range, the ship will deactivate your command authority."
He glared at Perkins.
"Command will then fall to the next senior officer,"
he gloated, pointing to his chest. "That is an interesting plan." "A good plan," Jaetz said.
"Thank—"
Biff reacted to the praise before he could remind himself that he didn't care what an enemy species thought of him. "Too bad." Jaetz made a honking sound and sent a thick wad of spit spinning through the air toward the three armed cadets. "You won't ever get to put your plan into action, you dumb little shit."
"What?"
Biff's aim wavered as he flailed his legs awkwardly to avoid being splattered with the disgusting projectile. Held steady by his two friends, he regained his composure and pointed the rifle at the Verdigris.
I could shoot you!
Ha! I've seen you with a rifle, Bifty boy. Safest place for me if you're shooting is right where I am, because you'll never hit me from there.
I...
The senior cadet's finger was flexing on the trigger, and Perkins reached out to restrain Jates, but the Verdigris warrior was not to be interfered with.
What?
Did I hurt your widow feelings? Jates sneered. You want to run to your mama because I said mean things to you? Would Widow Bifty Boy like his mommy to pat his furry widow head and make the bad words stop?
I swear I will shoot you right here!
One of Biff's friends tried to whisper something in the agitated cadet's ear, but he was not listening.
You stay back! I'm warning you!
He shouted at Jates, gesturing with the rifle that was now properly held to his shoulder, his bravado gone.
Boy, Jates said in a low, calm voice as he drifted toward the three mutinous cadets, you either give that rifle to someone who knows how to use it, or you pull that trigger. We all know you don't have the guts to shoot me, so stop making a fool out of yourself and surrender that weapon.
I'll do it. I swear I'll do it. He's coming at me.
Biff's head swiveled to his friends for support.
You saw this. I have no choice.
Biff, he's just, one of his friends pleaded.
You asked for this,
Biff bellowed as Jates drew within arm's length of the muzzle.
This is your fault.
He squeezed the trigger gently as he had been taught, though his eyes partly closed, which was not proper procedure. Nothing happened. Frantically, Biff swam backwards in the air, one eye on the oncoming Jates and the other checking the rifle's safety and power meters. They were both set correctly, so why was the rifle not firing? Were the Mazer exciters burned out? With one finger, he switched to flechette rounds, even though he knew using that ammunition could cause carnage in the compartment. Nothing happened. Jates reached out with lightning-fast speed and snatched the rifle from Biff's hands, breaking two of the cadet's fingers as the bigger and stronger Verdigris yanked it away. The two other cadets shot at Jates, but they too had no results as their sidearms refused to fire. Almost casually, Jates spun the rifle around in his hands and bashed Biff in the face with the butt, sending the senior cadet spinning off toward the still-open main door with blood spraying from his broken nose. Flipping the rifle around and setting it against his shoulder, Jates faced the two other would-be mutineers.
Are you two going to be smart and hand over those pistols, or will you give me the pleasure of bashing your stupid heads together?
The Ruhar looked at each other in a brief moment of panic before swallowing hard and meekly handing their pistols to the hulking Verdigris, who tucked them into the tool belt of his spacesuit. Emily Perkins felt she could dare breathe again after a shameful moment of not knowing what to do. Sergeant Jates had years of experience dealing with and training Ruhar cadets, so she had let him take the lead. But if he had been killed, she knew it would be her fault.
Sergeant Jates, she emphasized his rank. That was a terrible risk. Do not do anything like that again, she scolded while suppressing a shudder of relief.
I was in no danger. Jates slung the rifle over one shoulder and waved for Biff's friends to attend to the cadet who had tried to forcefully take over the ship. These weapons will not fire.
I saw that, Perkins admitted. How did you know that? Have all the weapons in the armory been disabled?
No, just these, and any others this amateur gang of morons stole from the armory. All weapons inside the armory should be fully active.
How did you know about that? Dave whispered in amazement. If these Ruhar cadets didn't know, how?
Jates tilted his head in a gesture like a shrug. The officers of the Ruhar fleet are not concerned about their own cadets attempting to seize control. Not so with aliens such as we Verdigris. We are still not fully trusted. During our initial orientation tour of this ship, the officer guiding us made a point of telling us not to ever think about breaking into the armory, because any attempt to breach security there would render those weapons useless. Any weapon removed from the armory without proper authorization is automatically disabled by the weapon itself, sending a power surge to fry its control chip. That is why I carry this. Jates flipped the rifle over, opened a port with one finger, and extracted a copper-colored flat square.
He tossed it to go drifting away, pulled an identical unit from a pocket, and inserted it in the rifle. "This fire control unit is active," the lizard announced with a grin that stretched his lips in an expression more terrifying than reassuring. Sighting on a broken piece of equipment lazily floating near the far bulkhead, he fiddled with the selector and squeezed the trigger. A maser beam blasted the target, sending hot droplets of metal to splatter the bulkhead and making everyone in the compartment duck and cover their faces. "The next time a Ruhar cadet tells you how their species is so smart, remember this." Dave and Perkins exchanged a silent, "Oh, shit," look. A Kristang held the only active weapon aboard the ship. Was he now going to seize control of the Ruta Stella, kill the humans and Ruhar, or simply throw them in the brig and try to signal a Kristang warship? If a Verdkris warrior wanted to join the Kristang warrior cast, bringing them a Ruhar warship full of cadet hostages might be a good way to prove his worth. Perkins saw Dave tense to launch himself at Jates, and her heart froze in fear for her young sergeant. "Here." Jates flipped the rifle around and handed it to Dave. "You should hold this." Dave was so shocked, he did not at first reach out for the rifle, believing it had to be a trick. When his hands wrapped around the rifle and Jates released it, Dave pulled it close to his chest, pointed it between his feet, and safed it. "You sure about this?" Dave asked before he could stop his stupid mouth. "The cadets would never accept me as commander. There is too much hate and distrust between our peoples," Jates explained sadly. "The Ruhar consider the Verdkris, like you humans, as pets," he jerked his head toward Bift, "who are indulged too much by our masters. Colonel Perkins, if we have any chance to survive this disaster, we need you to lead us." Jates gave her a proper U.S. military salute. Emily Perkins's internal reaction was to resent the pressure put on her. She wanted someone else to be responsible for a change, damn it. If the fates were determined to torment her, why couldn't they give her an easy challenge once in a while? She returned the salute. "Sergeon Jates, do you have any more of those magical control chips?" "Only one more, and it was in part of the ship that sustained significant battle damage." "So," she pointed to the rifle Dave carried, "that's the only active weapon aboard the ship?"
"Yes."
"That I know of." Perkins tilted her head. "We must trust each other," Jates replied with an unreadable expression. The alien was right, she knew. "Sergeant Chaika, you and Jates escort the mutineers to the brig." Dave made a show of flicking off the safety of his rifle. "Ma'am, there are probably other cadets involved in the mutiny. What about them?" "Unless we know specifically who was involved, they are all innocent until proven guilty. We need everyone we can get to repair the ship. I would like to consider this incident closed for now. The Ruhar authorities can deal with the legal matters when we contact the fleet." By his expression, Dave did not like that idea. "Yes, ma'am." If anyone even looked at him funny, Dave intended to throw them in the brig and ask questions later. No way was he going to take any shit from punk hamster kids. Perkins turned her attention to the Kristang, or, she corrected herself, Verdkris. "Sergeon Jates."
"Yes, Colonel."
"Make sure these cadets don't know any tricks about breaking out of the brig." That drew a smile from the Verdkris, an expression that was not quite revolting.
"Yes, Colonel."
After Dave departed with Bift and his crew, Perkins floated over to Jin's workstation. "Do you have an initial assessment?"
No,
the Ruhar girl stammered, her hands shaking. She wasn't ready for the crushing responsibility, she knew it, and she also could not just walk away. The entire crew was counting on her.
"Colonel, even if the reactors can be restarted, I don't dare feed energy into the ship. There are too many power conduits with open circuits and other systems that might blow if unregulated power is fed into them. We need to get the entire ship forward to frame 67.
She pointed to the thick bulkhead to the aft, which protected delicate biological systems from the radiation of the reactors and jump drive.
"Isolated. I don't have enough people to do that. Enough people who know how to do that. I can't be here and also manage the work teams.
Understood. Garner, take a deep breath. Perkins put a hand on the cadet's shoulder. You can do this.
How?
Jin waved her fingers at the console in front of her, densely cluttered with confusing data, all of which needed her focused attention.
It is impossible.
Don't tell me about impossible, cadet. Perkins kept her tone soft and reassuring. My team destroyed a Kristang battlegroup using ancient maser cannons that no one knew even existed. Later, we were trapped on an island with an enemy commando squad and no weapons, and we found a way to kill every one of those murderous lizards.
Yes, ma'am,
Jin replied with a faint smile. The fact that she could smile at all was a good sign.
You keep working here. I'll find a way to get those work teams organized. Respectfully, Colonel, you don't know this ship's systems.
Correct. But I know someone who does. On the way to patching another leak in the hull, Nert stopped by the brig. His helmet was off, attached to his belt with a strap. But clearly he had been wearing the helmet for an extended period while working hard, for the fur on his head was plastered down with dried sweat, and the helmet liner had created a crease across his forehead.
Hello, Miss Shauna,
he greeted the human with weary good cheer. While Nert, Dave, and Jesse usually used nicknames for each other, the two soldiers had not thought up an acceptable nickname for Shauna. Jesse's attempt to call her Nuke, merely because her actions had erased an entire island from the surface of paradise, had not gone well.
How are you?
Before Shauna could answer, Biff elbowed one of his fellow mutineers to get attention while he insulted the young cadet.
Oh, Nerd, did you come here to make sure your pet isn't lonely?
You'll be quiet, Biff.
Nerd jabbed a finger at the senior cadet, his expression filled with anger and disgust.
The ship is in crisis. We need everyone working on damage control. And you?
He shook a fist while trying to think what to say.
You are useless as a knitted condom.
Nerdy.
Shauna couldn't help laughing.
Is that something you learned from the 3rd Infantry?
No.
He looked puzzled.
I heard Konpon saying it to Ski. Did I not use that expression correctly? It is a very colorful phrase.
It is very colorful, yes.
She covered her mouth with a hand so the cadets in the brig would not see she could not stop laughing.
It is also true.
She scowled at Biff, and with that the humor was gone.
How are you?
Nert pointed to the patch kit strapped to his waist.
I fear there are more holes in the hull than we have patches to fix. My team leader thinks we must do what we can by starting near the engineering control center and working our way forward.
That is stupid, Biff protested. You should first conduct a survey of the ship and then prioritize critical selections. If we don't secure the life support systems before they sustain more damage, we will all die out here soon.
You had a chance to help, Biff?
Nert waved a hand at the disgraced senior cadet with a dismissive gesture, something that would have astonished Nert mere hours ago. The attempted mutiny had made Biff's status fall so far, Nert no longer cared what his former cadet leader thought about anything.
Now, the best thing you can do to help is stop breathing, to conserve oxygen for people working to fix the ship. Miss Shauna, I must go now. I will be back when I can.
You don't worry about me, Nerdy. I'll be fine.
Shauna wanted to be doing something more valuable than babysitting cadets who were securely locked behind bars, but she understood humans were pretty much just in the way for the task of repairing the sophisticated alien starship. Still, Irene and Derek were practicing to fly and jump the ship if main power could be restored, while Jesse and Dave were part of a work crew patching holes in the hull. Humans did not need to understand hyperspatial navigation to slap patches on holes in the inner hull, and Shauna was itching to get away from the brig soon. Shortly after Nert left, Perkins pulled herself into the chamber that led to the ship's brig. That compartment was larger than she expected aboard a training cruiser, but then it was likely left over from the toaster's service as a line ship. Biff and his two friends were floating in the center of the compartment. They were upside down from her normal perspective. Perkins thought the brats had done that deliberately to upset their single guard.
Jarrett,
She nodded. Ma'am. Shauna patted the heavy wrench sitting in her lap. Don't you worry. These jokers aren't going anywhere.
Colonel Perkins!
Biff mispronounced her name as Perkins because he knew that would annoy the human officer.
I have rights as a prisoner.
He ran a finger over the dried blood on his face where Jates had bashed him with the rifle and waggled his broken fingers.
You must offer proper medical attention to injured prisoners. I demand that you...
You demand nothing, you punk-ass little shit. Perkins was too tired to add the proper vehemence to her tone. You are not a prisoner. You are guilty of a mutiny. I checked Ruhar fleet regulations, and they are very clear. Anyone attempting a mutiny when a ship is in combat conditions only has a right to piss in their pants before they get thrown out an airlock. Your fleet, your people, are at war, cadet. They don't screw around. I admire that about your people.
You are an alien. You have no right to...
I am the commanding officer of this ship. Perkins waved her Z-phone so Biff could see the full set of command codes.
You are not going to kill us.
Biff was regaining his arrogance. He reasoned if the human had the determination to throw him out an airlock, she would have done that already before she lost her nerve.
My family is powerful. You do not dare touch me.
Ma'am, please give me 2 minutes with that asshole. Shauna thumped the wrench into the bulkhead behind her. His face is beat up already. No one will know. Don't waste the energy, Jarrett, Perkins frowned.
Have you come here to gloat, Miss Perkins?
Biff asked in a taunting tone he used for his friends, but the fear in his eyes revealed his true emotions. No, I'm here to put your furry asses to work, Perkins explained simply. That remark was completely unexpected. Biff could not respond until one of his friends nudged him. He tapped his earpiece. I do not think that translated properly. You heard me right. Work. If we're going to survive, we need to fix the ship, and I need all hands on deck for that. I can't have 3 able-bodied people wasting time in the brig just because one of you is stupid. She locked eyes with Biff.
We should put our trust in you,
Biff asked in a mocking tone. You should put your trust in Urmat Datha. He chose to put me in command. Seeing a chance for redemption and to regain his personal status, Biff folded his arms defiantly.
Why should we help?
First, because if you don't, everyone aboard this ship might die, including you 3 knuckleheads. Second, because no matter how powerful your parents are, the only thing your fleet command hates more than a mutiny is a failed mutiny. The rest of you, she directed her gaze at Biff's companions, might be able to claim you were misled by your cadet leader. But not if you refuse to assist in repairing the ship. Perkins could see the comment had struck home by the awkward movements of the other cadets and by the guilty looks they gave to their leader. The cadets may have followed Biff when they thought they could take the ship, but neither of them wanted to face punishment now that the mutiny had failed. Cadet Colsoon, I need someone to prioritize assignments and organize work parties. That surprised Biff more than anything else Perkins had said.
You want me to lead the repair effort?
No, I need you to direct and coordinate the cadet teams that will be doing the work. Cadet Garner has an engineering team working on overall plans to get the reactors restarted, but there is a lot of other work she needs done, and I can't take people with an engineering specialty away from their tasks. You are the cadet leader. I need you to lead. Biff knew the human was flattering him. At that moment, he did not care. She was offering him a way out of the deeply humiliating mess he had gotten himself into. Biff had not been able to admit it to his friends, but when the brig door had closed with a solid clanging sound of doom, he had almost broken down and cried from fear and embarrassment. He shuddered with relief, a tremble he could not hide from his friends.
Should we shake hands? I believe that is the human custom.
Biff held a hand through the bars. Cadet, Perkins tilted her head and pursed her lips in displeasure. I am not making a deal with you. I am giving you an order as your commanding officer. You only have to obey. Biff stiffened, and his friends tensed for his reaction. What he did was unexpected.
He pressed two fingers to his cheek in the Ruhar form of a salute.
Understood and agreed, Colonel.
Excellent. Sergeant Jaetz, as she spoke, the Verdgris came through the doorway. We'll come with you to assist. Biff blanched at seeing the Verdgris, and he subconsciously wrapped his injured fingers with his other hand.
We have to trust each other. But you send this person,
he chose his words carefully,
to spy on me.
I am not a spy, and I am not worried about you taking over the ship. Jaetz glared through the bars. You have already proven to be totally incompetent of that. We will see whether you are competent to do anything aboard this ship. Biff knew he was not going to win the argument about Jaetz following him around the ship.
If you are not watching me, what will you be doing?
My task is... Think of it as providing motivation.
Motivation? How?
Biff asked, his eyes flicking between the menacing Kristang and his friends who were clearly going to be no help at all. Jaetz pointed at the senior cadet.
Ass?
Then he pointed at his feet.
Meet Boot.
Any questions? Given a reprieve from death, or at least a long prison sentence, Biff threw himself into his assigned task with feverish energy. Perkins had to admit the cadet leader had excellent organizational skills and a natural charisma that made people want to follow him, finding herself forced to admire the job he was doing. He got Jin's list of tasks prioritized not only by level of potential danger to the ship, but also took into account which tasks could be combined to minimize the time required and risk to the teams working in hazardous conditions. Soon the repair teams began to fix things faster than they could break, and Jin Garner had time to think beyond the immediate crisis. When Biff, escorted by Jaetz, came to report progress to Perkins, Jin decided it was time to deliver the bad news. "We can get one reactor restarted," she told Perkins with a raised eyebrow, implying she was not entirely sure of her facts. "The other reactor is too damaged to attempt a restart."
"All right. All right, that's good, then."
Perkins stifled a yawn. Damn, she was tired, and there was no prospect of her getting sleep any time soon.
"The ship can run on one reactor?"
"It can, but that is not the problem. The containment shielding around the good reactor is damaged. We don't have enough replacement components, and we can't take shielding from the other reactor because damage to the second reactor is even more extensive."
"The reactor will leak radiation?"
"Worse. It will leak plasma. Once plasma gets past containment, it will burn through the outer shielding. And then,"
Jin made an exaggerated shrug, "we will lose the reactor, all systems near the reactor, and probably the ship.
Is there anything you can do to compensate?"
"Yes. We can run the reactor at very low power and periodically vent plasma to reduce the stress on the containment system. Colonel, there is only so much we can do to keep the containment from failing. My best guess is once the reactor is restarted, we will only have 10 days before it must be shut down permanently."
10 days?
Biff squeaked with dismay.
"We can't go anywhere in 10 days.
The reactor isn't the only problem.
Jin ran a hand through her hair in a very human-like gesture, sweeping bangs out of her eyes.
"It isn't even the most important problem. The battle group's reaction was not planned, so the fleet does not know where we were when the Bosphorak attacked. The fleet won't know we are missing for another 2 weeks, and a search could take months. Or more."
"That assumes the fleet will conduct a search and rescue operation," Perkins mused, instantly regretting she had spoken aloud.
"The fleet will search for us,"
Biff declared indignantly.
"My mother!"
"The Bosphorak may have launched a large-scale attack into Ruhar territory," Perkins explained. "The fleet may not have the resources for a search operation, especially if they don't know there are any ships left to search for."
"Oh."
Biff stared at his feet, chastened. Even his parents could not simply order a warship to search for their son if the fleet was hard-pressed responding to an incursion by the Bosphorak. "However we're getting out of this, we need to plan to do it on our own." Perkins looked to Jin. "What are our options?"
"That is the problem, Colonel. I do not see that we have any options. We have enough charge in the capacitors for several jumps, and at low power,
The reactor could slowly recharge the capacitors for perhaps another 2 jumps before I have to shut down the reactor. You must understand, this ship is not capable of traveling to a star system with a habitable world from here. Even if all systems were operating perfectly, it is unlikely we could perform a flight between star systems before some critical component wore out. Our ships are not usually capable of interstellar flight, which is why we rely on Jarattha star carriers.
I did know that, Perkins replied with a measure of irritation. We are not capable of jumping to anywhere with a habitable world, or a data relay we could use to send a signal, or a fleet refueling station, anything like that.
On the panel in front of her, she scrolled through a star map of the area within 2 light years of what Captain Strebitch had said was their present position. It sure did look empty. A whole lot of nothing. 2.2 light-years away was a brown dwarf star, without a symbol indicating any species in the Rindaloo Coalition had a facility there, not even an automated monitoring station. The fleet doesn't know where we are because the battle group altered course when we found the debris from that civilian ship. Is there a way to see? She fiddled with the controls, then gave up. The original flight path plan of the star carrier before it altered course?
Because that original flight path is where the fleet would be searching for us?
Yes, it's here. Jin reached over and adjusted the controls, zooming out. At closest approach, the planned flight path was, she squinted at the display, about 16 light years from here.
Hell, that's no good, Perkins said sourly. No way can we jump that far. Our jump drive isn't capable of getting us anywhere useful from here.
She did not consider that she might have just insulted the Ruhar by disparaging their jump drive technology. Perkins wound a strand of hair around one finger, a nervous habit that seemed to fascinate the Ruhar. She pulled her hand away and bit down on a thumbnail while she thought.
We don't, she said softly, speaking to herself. We don't know that star carrier was destroyed, do we?
We saw it blow up, Bift scoffed.
No. It was Jin's turn to look thoughtful. We saw it get hit, just before we jumped away. We didn't see.
Her voice trailed off as she accessed controls on her workstation, recalling sensor data of the final seconds before the route to Stella jumped away. The audience watched anxiously as the Jarattha ship got battered, then the image cut off as their own ship jumped.
Run that back, Perkins ordered. Then, there's too much interference. Can you clean up the image?
There was a lot of energy saturating the battle space back then, Jin warned as she manipulated the sensor feed. Our ability to separate signal from noise is limited.
There. Perkins jabbed a finger at the display excitedly. Pause it there. No, back. There. What am I seeing?
That looks like the star carrier took a direct hit amidships.
Jin examined the fuzzy data from several different sensor feeds, running the images through filters, then giving up as the data could not be cleaned up any further.
You are right. A missile struck the star carrier's spine just before we jumped.
So, Perkins noted with a tiny flare of hope, we don't know that ship was destroyed.
That is crazy, Bift threw up his hands. We can't rely on wishful thinking.
Perkins ignored the cadet leader. What is this? She asked about a glow in the image off to the top.
It is... Jin pulled back. It appears the destroyer city of Sandep jumped away less than a second before we did.
Oh, she groaned with dismay.
No, it attempted to jump away. Look at how the event horizon of their jump wormhole is distorted. They were too far inside the damping field.
She looked up to meet Perkins' eyes.
It is unlikely the Sandep survived the jump attempt.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Perkins knew her words sounded flat when she was talking about the deaths of almost 100 Ruhar. What could she say? The entire battle group was probably dead also, along with the crew of their Jarattha mothership.
That could actually be good for us.
Jin's comment surprised Perkins, and the Ruhar cadet saw that, so she explained.
The collapse of the Sandep's event horizon could have created a local spatial distortion, preventing the Bosphorak ship from jumping to pursue us.
But that battlecruiser could have jumped eventually, Perkins guessed.
Yes.
Jin scrunched up her face to recall the intricacies of jump physics, which was not specifically part of her studies.
The Basfarak would have to fly a considerable distance through normal space to get clear of the distortion before they could jump.
Like how far? Could that battlecruiser still be there?
No, they would not need to fly that far before jumping. That ship's rate of acceleration is impressive.
Jin knew that because she had taken a minute to study up about their opponent after the battle.
Outstanding, Perkins muttered to herself.
Then there is no reason to think the Basfarak are still hanging around the battle space. Bift did not like the sound of that. His ears stood up in alarm.
You cannot be suggesting we jump back into that area.
Cadet Kolsun, I am not suggesting anything. I am considering our options, and I might order a jump back into the battle space. Her tone made it clear she was not seeking input from a former and failed mutineer. Jin nodded, ignoring Bift. A day before, she would never have done that.
You are hoping some of our ships might have survived?
Perkins nodded curtly.
It's our best bet that I can see. The Basfarak know our ships can't travel between stars.
She missed the fact that she had referred to Ruhar warships as our rather than your.
Once they snapped the Beetle Star Carrier in half, they might have figured their job was done and moved on.
Yes, Cadet Kolsun, that is wishful thinking, she admitted with a defiant tone.
Sometimes wishful thinking is all you've got to go on out here. Staying here and doing nothing is only wishing for a slow death. Bift looked to Jin for help, but she looked away.
Colonel Perkins,
he pronounced her name correctly.
If the Basfarak have not left the area, it will be certain death for us to jump back in there.
Agreed. My judgment is the Basfarak had no tactical reason to remain in the area. For whatever purpose they stalked and hit our battle group, their mission was a complete success once they disabled that star carrier. She had decided their best option for survival was to jump back to the only place in range where they might find help. Now the question was, could they do that?